Welcome, everyone. So disclaimer, yada, yada, yada. This is information, not medical advice. If you have a health condition, talk to your doctor before making any changes. So I said that the liver was the main source of detoxification, and I mentioned the digestive tract. I mentioned that the skin is an elimination route because you can sweat through it, and toxins can leave through the sweat. The kidney is a good source of detox because once the liver's gone through the detoxification pathways, made the toxins water soluble, you can pee them out through your kidneys. Of course, sweat and your lungs, breathing them out. So, but by far the most detox activity happens in the liver. Now, this picture gives us an overview. It calls it step one and step two. We usually call it phase one and phase two. And your toxins have to go through both phase one and phase two before they can be eliminated. Some of them are eliminated via the bile duct. They go out the bile duct and go down through the gallbladder into the bile and go out through your bowel. Others are eliminated via the kidneys. They're filtered in the blood. The liver's done it best it can, puts them in the blood, the filter filters it more, and comes out as urine. Okay? So there's a list on here of different amino acids and vitamins and minerals that are required for step one and step two, or as I like to call them, or as is traditionally called in functional medicine, phase one and phase two. And some of those nutrients for phase one are the B vitamins, folic acid, glutathione, generally antioxidants like milk thistle, SOD, those are good ones too, carotenoids, vitamin A derivatives, vitamin E and C. So your standard antioxidants, which are ACE, ACE, and then in addition some others. Milk thistle is very specific for the liver. It's an antioxidant for the liver. So the nutrients to go through stage two are a whole bunch of amino acids, and I'm going to highlight that and show you for each of those stages what those are. Glutamine, glycine, taurine, and cysteine, especially. Sulfurylated phytochemicals. Garlic and cruciferous vegetables, so sulfur-containing stuff. So that's your body's cleanup crew. Let's go deeper. So liver detoxification, you know that it neutralizes the fats. It takes them and converts fat-soluble toxins to water-soluble substances that can be excreted. The direct route of blood from the intestine to the liver is amazing. It makes the liver and the gut be able to talk to each other. What it does is when you have some toxins that have come in, like say the toxins have come in through your gut, and you pull out all the nutrients and the bolus of food ends up in your large intestine ready for excretion, and throughout that there's water being reabsorbed from the colon, and that vessel goes straight to the liver. And the reason that that's a good thing is that it prevents the toxins from going and making a whole tour around your body before it gets to the liver. See, if there wasn't that direct connection between the liver and the intestine, then those toxins would have the ability to have a ride around the body, around the bloodstream, and can cause havoc in your system. So we've kept it smart and have that direct link via the vessel that goes from the liver to the digestive tract. Or the digestive tract to the liver, I should say. So the liver detoxification neutralizes the toxins, converts fat soluble to water soluble, and it has a phase one and phase two. So if you look here, this is an example of how NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, are handled and processed through the liver. So if you look, but where NSAID can be sulfated and excreted, inactivated basically, it can also go through the phase one, phase two, and there's a hydroxy group that's added to the NSAID to make it more excretable before it goes to the kidney. And then the other part is directly with the glucuronate. So I'll talk to you more about those pathways in a minute. You'll understand what those are. Cytochrome P450, you're going to see that a lot. Cytochrome P450 refers to those enzymes that are involved in the liver detoxification pathways. This is a great chart to have. I'm really excited that I found this chart. So look at the top. It shows you where the toxins are coming from, either endotoxins or exotoxins from outside. The toxins enter the liver and they go through phase one and phase two. So here it puts it out as phase one. Phase one reactions are pretty straightforward. There's not a whole lot of nutrition. There are some nutrients that are needed and used during that process, but it's not as nutrient heavy as required for phase two. So you've got reactions that happen like oxidation, reduction, hydrolysis, hydration, and dehalogenation. That's what happens to those toxins. And then they go and they become intermediates. So think of it as two rooms. And it was a really great description I saw somewhere. I'll use that description. You go to the airport and you go with this newfangled checkout thing. You just stick your credit card in and it checks you in, and now you have your ticket. Used to be you had to wait in a long line there, and then you had to wait in a line to get through the gate. Well, now that phase one, think of the getting your ticket is phase one. It's really quick. It's really easy. Nothing to it. Then you have to go through phase two, and you have to stand in this long line, and then you have to take half your clothes off and take your computer out of the bag and take all your shampoo out. And by the time you're standing there, you know, half naked with all your belongings in these little pouches sitting, going through baskets. And it takes a long time. It's not just like go up to the machine, stick your credit card in, out pops your ticket, and you go. So phase one is kind of like those nice automatic ticket booths for checking you in at the airport. Quick, easy, boom, done. But now you have to go wait on the line. And the more people are coming in, and as fast as that process is to begin with for getting your ticket, that other process isn't going to get any faster. And so the line gets longer and longer and longer and longer. And all you are waiting. You're waiting in limbo. Meanwhile, you're like carrying your bag. You want to sit down. It's that intermediate, okay? That's what happens with the liver. Goes through phase one, gets its ticket real quick, and then it sits there and waits. The problem, though, is you don't necessarily become toxic after you get your ticket. The toxins that you're detoxifying, actually, some of them actually become more toxic when they get processed through phase one, because the intent is that there's never a delay. That phase one happens, and then phase two happens, and then we're done. That as soon as you leave phase one, you go into phase two. But that's not what's happening for a lot of people. A lot of people are what are called paradoxical or pathological detoxifiers, meaning phase one is just humming along, and phase two is slow as molasses. So you have these toxic intermediates. Now your liver's all tied up trying to handle the people that are already in, the toxins that are already in phase two. So what happens is this, basically those toxins get a ride around the block. They get to ride through your body. And some people experience that as headaches or sluggishness or foggy brain, breaking out in a skin rash. And it's all because they have sped up the detoxification on one end, and they're releasing toxins from their body stores. And then all of a sudden, they're in a slowdown. Okay. So those intermediate processes need to be eliminated. They need to be eliminated. So some of the nutrients, they're all listed on the chart. I'll go through them in more detail on a separate chart. But there's processes called sulfation, glucuronidation, glutathione conjugation, amino acid conjugation, acetylation, and methylation. So there's six pathways. Okay. And when those are humming along, like I said, when you have all the specific nutrients for each of those pathways, which we'll review, detox goes along nicely. And you end up putting out the end result toxins in the bile, which are eliminated as feces, or in the kidney, the serum that goes to the kidneys and goes out in the urine. So let's go into a little bit more detail about the phases of liver detox. Like I said, there's a blood vessel straight from your digestive tract to your liver. So 98% of the toxins are neutralized by the liver before they get into circulation in a healthy person. There's a little bit that sneaks by, right? But most of the toxins that go from the blood vessel in your digestive tract into the liver will do so very effectively, and only 2% of them are ever going to make it into circulation. But if you're not healthy, if you have that paradoxical or pathological response, as I just described, where phase one is faster than phase two, those toxins are going to get a chance to go around. And sometimes even 100% may be able to go around. And that's not good for you. Phase one, think of it as a simple process. They all get the same one or two different reactions. Everything goes through, all the toxins. There's no differentiation between the types of toxins. However, in phase two, we're personalizing it. Okay? We're saying, oh, what does this toxin need to be eliminated? What does this? And there's specific categories, which I'll share with you, that go through the different phases of phase two. So there's six parts to phase two. And there's some conjugation, combining these with amino acids, with vitamins, with minerals, and with antioxidants to form new compounds that are then safe to circulate in your system and get eliminated by the kidneys. Here's part of the problem. There are certain things that actually speed up phase one that make it go even faster. And they're not nutrients, they're problems. So if you drink alcohol, caffeine, you take aspirin or Tylenol, you smoke, or you take other drugs like phenobarbital, steroids, and sulfa drugs, those are going to give a message to the liver that says, whoa, we got a big toxic load, causes phase one to speed up. It's easy to speed up phase one. So that makes the pathological detoxification even worse. So let's look at some of the things that speed up phase one and slow down phase one. Because typically you would think, oh, I don't want to do anything to slow down my detoxification. I just want to do things to speed it up. Well, in the case of phase one with a pathological detoxifier, definitely want to do some things to slow it down. So the things that will speed it up are some of the same things that also speed up phase two. So we don't want to avoid them. Of course, we do want to avoid those toxins I mentioned on the previous page. Alcohol, caffeine, nicotine, some of the drugs, acetaminophen and barbiturates. But you don't want to really say, oh, I'm going to deprive my body of vitamin C and that way it will slow down phase one. No, you don't want to do that. You want to keep those levels because those levels are going to be helpful for other processes. What you want to do is slow down phase one and speed up phase two at the same time. So there's a chemical called naringenin in grapefruit, and that is very good at slowing down phase one. Turmeric. In fact, it can be dangerous to be doing grapefruit or grapefruit juice when you're on the medications that need to be detoxified. When you speed up phase one, but you don't speed up phase two, it actually helps those drugs go around for a second time, or a component of them, and it can be dangerous. So the other things that slow down are turmeric. Turmeric, wonderful herb, anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, really super for the liver. Capsaicin, that's another thing that's found in chili peppers. Clove, and quercetin and calendula. Those are things that slow down phase one and also speed up phase two, most of them. The grapefruit juice doesn't, but the others do. That's your ideal, is to slow down the phase one and speed up the phase two if you have a pathological detoxifier. So there is a picture. There's the liver lobe, and you've got all these bile little canaliculi in there, and they bring the bile to and from, they bring the toxins to and from, and the toxins are then put back out into the portal circulation. So if you look here at the vessels, right, you've got your gallbladder over on the left-hand side, and it's that little green ball, and there's a green vessel, that's your bile, that's not blood turned green, it's actually your bile, and then the blue is the portal vein, and the red is the artery that's bringing fresh blood from the heart. So the portal vein actually brings blood from the intestines to the liver. You've got the right lobe, you've got the left lobe, and there's another lobe in the back. This is one of my favorite analogies. Okay, I was playing this video earlier and I was capturing the little picture, and my son's saying, what are you playing that? Why do you keep playing that? Because I was trying to capture just the right scene in a screenshot. And I said, well, because it relates to the presentation that I'm finishing up for today. He goes, what? What does that have to do with your presentation? So I explained it to him, just like I'm going to explain to you. The phase one to phase two, the buildup of toxic intermediates are stored as fat They're stored in the brain and they're stored in the myelin, and they create symptoms like headaches, sluggishness, brain fog, and focus problems. So phase two can keep up with phase one as long as things aren't coming too fast and furious. So this is a video, it's on YouTube, I gave you the link, of Ethel and Lucy. They are at the chocolate factory where they've been given the job of putting the little chocolates in their little papers and sending them further down on the line. And they were told, don't let anything pass you. If anything passes you, you're going to get fired. So they're going along and everything's just beautiful, just like the liver's going, oh, great, get rid of it, get rid of it, putting them downstream. And then it started to speed up a little and you saw them having to step up the pace. And then it got so fast that things were starting to slide by them, so they started taking some of the chocolates off and shoving them in their pockets and in their mouth and in their hats. That's what your liver does when it can't keep up. It shoves those toxins away because it doesn't want them to escape into circulation. It starts shoving as many of them as it can into storage. And the way that it stores it is in fat mostly. Your brain and myelin are fat, which means that it's going to affect your brain and the transmission and movement to your extremities. And your myelin sheaths can get damaged, a process called multiple sclerosis, where there's autoimmune damage to your myelin sheaths, which means that the signal from your brain to your leg takes a long time to get there. And these people have difficulty walking and eventually end up in wheelchairs. So they create headaches when you have a buildup of these toxins, because inevitably the liver can't keep up and it can't keep up with storing this fat, because just like Ethel and Lucy found, a couple of those slid by. So watch that video. It's kind of fun to watch. So understanding phase two detoxification. So phase one is easy. It requires a few nutrients. It's a hydrolysis kind of reaction, produces these toxic intermediates. The toxic intermediates then go through one of the six pathways. There's really six. If you look down at the bottom, glycination is really a subset of amino acid conjugation. Glycine is an amino acid, so I'll explain to that when I get there. So there's really six main pathways. And depending on what type of toxin, whether it's mercury, heavy metals, whether it's endotoxins from your gut bacteria, whether it's a particular pesticide or herbicide or paint or any of those things, they have different constituents and structures, including your own body stuff like your hormones and your neurotransmitters. So depending, they will go through any one of these phases. The glutathione conjugation, where the toxin is, you know, kind of paired up with glutathione to try to detoxify it. Amino acid conjugation, where it's tied up with any of a number of amino acids for release. Methylation, where methyl groups are added there, and those are specific chemical groups that helps to move processes in the body more effectively, improves detoxification. Sulfation, where sulfur is added. Acetylation, where acetyl-CoA is added. And then glucuronidation, where glucuronic acid is added. But there's more than just the amino acids or the methyls, etc., required for it to go through. There are a number of nutrients that are important. And like I said, glycination is really a subset of amino acid conjugation, so we'll look at that as part of that. Some of the nutrients required for glutathione conjugation would be precursors to glutathione. So either glutathione itself or precursors like cysteine, glycine, glutamic acid, and various cofactors. Essential fatty acids, including omega-6 and omega-3, like black currant, flaxseed, EPA. Parathyroid tissue sometimes. Sometimes that's helpful. Amino acid conjugation requires glycine and also other ones that we'll look at when we do a separate page on that. Methylation, it's methyl donors. So methyl B12, methyl folate, magnesium, methionine. And then sulfation would be anything that has sulfur groups. So cysteine and its precursor methionine, also taurine, they are amino acids that contain sulfur. And then things like B12, folic acid, methyl donors, magnesium, B6 and B5. B6, P5P, and then MSM, they all are important forms for providing sulfur to this phase two part. Acetylation, it requires acetyl-CoA, and those are just a short list. You also need vitamin B5 and and a couple of others. So I'll go through those on the individual pages. Glucuronidation, pretty straightforward. You add glucuronic acid, you add magnesium. Glycination, it uses arginase, glycine, and cofactors like folic acid, manganese B2, B6, B5. We'll get more into each of those, but this is just a general list so you can have it all in one place of some of the nutrients needed for detox. And there's a list, foods that detox and foods that hurt detox, foods that help detox, foods that hurt detox. So these are some of the nutrients, amino acids, vitamin C, glutathione, sulfur-containing substances like MSM, B1, B2, B3, B6, B12. That about covers most of the Bs, and plus folic acid, and then the EFAs, blackcurrant, seed oil, flax oil. Then there's some minerals like manganese, molybdenum, magnesium, iron, selenium, and zinc. So all of these are feeding these pathways to help you so that you don't end up with a person with a sluggish phase 2 and a fast phase 1. These are going to help support the whole process. So let's go through each of these pathways in the liver in a little bit more detail. Again, if you remember these, great. I think it's going to be useful, but keep the charts handy to refer back to. These are nice little summary charts. The methylation pathway will help you get rid of dopamine, histamine, heavy metals, and estrogen. So these are important things to be getting out. And the way that you help that process along is choline, important, and that you can find in avocado, soy, and sunflower, and lecithin in particular. B vitamins, beets for the betaine. Betaine in beets helps with the methylation. SAMe, which is acetyl methionine. And 500 milligrams 3 times a day seems to be really helpful for detox, especially for pushing the methylation pathways, and especially if you have a genetic disorder that affects the methylation pathways, which is very common, and we'll be talking about that shortly. And then we have regular methionine, magnesium. With folate, you want to make sure it is methylfolate, because methylfolate is the real deal. Folic acid is not, and it'll actually thwart the methylation pathway, whereas methylfolate will feed it. And of course, the methyl B12 and the donors. And it seems like it works best in terms of your, if you have one of these genetic issues with methylation, that it's best to take your methyl B12 and then follow it up within a half hour or so with the methylfolate to give them some space. And then for methyl donors, anything that could donate an extra methyl group, like trimethylglycine. How many methyls do you think that has? 1, 2, 3. Trimethylglycine, or dimethylglycine, right? So one has 3 and one has 2. Tri has 3, di has 2. And then MSM, really good source of methyl groups. Sulfation helps us get rid of phenols, bile acids, used up thyroid hormone, acetaminophen, aspartame, bacterial endotoxins, neurotransmitters, xenoestrogens, and then basically used up steroid hormones, cortisol, androgens, and female. This is really important. It's really important that we not be inhibiting this. And we can inhibit it with NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. Also, though, taking too much molybdenum, which is kind of hard to do, but vitamin B6 over about 100 milligrams a day. And some people do take more than that of vitamin B6. So be aware of how much B6 they're taking and what form to see if it might be an issue that causes them to have lower sulfation. And then how do you support sulfation? Well, the amino acids, methionine, cysteine, and taurine, because they're sulfur containing. Any high sulfur foods like brassicas and MSM. Glutathione itself, although it's not really highly absorbable orally, but you can take it as a patch or a skin cream. And then NAC, which is N-acetylcysteine, which is a precursor to, it's got all the building blocks you need to make glutathione. Glucuronidation helps you get rid of bilirubin and bile acids. Well, yeah, you know, that's a metabolic waste, right? That's something that's generated in our own bodies, and it needs to be gotten rid of. Solicitates, aspirins, and over-the-counters, common over-the-counter medications are often glucuronized. Morphine, air pollutants, fatty acid derivatives, so some of those oxidized fats, retinoids, which are members of the vitamin A. They're similar to vitamin A, but there's synthetic ones made for acne treatment. Aspirin, food additives, preservatives. These are all detoxified in this glucuronidation pathway. as well as aspartame. So you see that some of these items came up twice. So some of them have to go through a couple of different pathways to get fully detoxified. The things that inhibit it are aspirin and fluoride. So you need to be asking people about their headache history and how often they take aspirin. But more importantly, and more common, the source of inhibition is fluoride, because it's put in the water. So how much tap water are they drinking? Do they have an adequate filtration system? And then how do you support glucuronidation? Omega-3s, really good, DHA and EPA. Also, limonene, which is the essential oil found in citrus. It's in the peel of the lemon, the lime, the orange, the grapefruit, tangerine. And then SAMe. And you can see SAMe shows up a lot in the various pathways. Glutathione is this master antioxidant. We have to really give it credit for being as important as it is. It is super, 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 super important. It's also very hard to come by. It's hard to absorb, and it's hard to get the levels up. One of the reasons it's hard to get the levels up is that there's a particular genetic issue with the glutathione transferase, GST, that inhibits the amount of glutathione that you make. And when that happens, then you don't conjugate with glutathione as well as you should, and liver detox is very slow and sluggish. This is a really important one because it does the heavy metals. So if you're going and getting your mercury removed, or somebody's exposed to heavy metals in the workplace, you want to make sure that their glutathione conjugation is working adequately. Okay, so it's an important part of a heavy metals program that you're supplementing with or doing something to improve their glutathione. One way that you can get glutathione in is IV. Not pleasant, not cheap. And I know people who are getting a lot of dental work done, and they're doing that afterwards. And some dentists, progressive dentists, are doing that, along with things like ozone and vitamin C therapy as well. Solvents. A lot of us are exposed to solvents. If you paint your fingernails and then you take them off, the acetone. Acetone is a solvent. If you use paints, if you paint and use oil paints, the solvents were used to clean your brushes. That's why I use watercolors. Herbicides and fungicides are processed through this pathway. Polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which are a lot of the pollutants in the air. And then lipid peroxides, which are basically byproducts of oxidized lipids, oxidized fats. So what do? Well, avoid aspirin and fluoride, and then supplement with the brassicas, the limonene, vitamin C, essential fatty acids, NAC, cysteine, glycine, glutamic acid, zinc and selenium, B vitamins, and alpha lipoic acid. So do you have to use all of them? No. Can you use a nice formula that has a bunch of them in it? Sure. Do you want to do individual ones? Yes, and then you sit down with the person and you make up, you know, what you think makes the most sense with them. And you make the most sense by based on which of these pathways are they contributing to more. Do they need to have their glutathione increased or the methylation? That's a good question. So let's look on to the acetylation pathway, which gets rid of sulfa drugs, which is a kind of an antibiotic. Histamine, which is produced when you have an allergic reaction. Serotonin, which is produced all the time in your gut and your brain, keeps your mood good. PABA, pyrimenobenzoic acid. Procaine, which is topical analgesic. Hydrazines, sulfuramides, and of course things like tobacco and other environmental toxins. So it's a matter of really working to improve all these pathways. But you can see, as you learn more about what these pathways include, why the kinds of detoxification programs you might have been exposed to or been part of really do work, because you're really upregulating so many of the genes here. Then we have amino acid conjugation, which means basically shoving it together, shoving amino acid onto one of these intermediates so that they go down the right pathway. So xenobiotics, meaning anything kind of that resembles estrogen that's in the, well, in the environment, or various pollutants, salicylates, like in aspirin, but also it's preservative in certain things. And benzoate, preservative in lots of things. And toluene, which is a precursor to benzoate, and can be converted into benzoate. So these are things you want to really be careful about. Okay, so inhibitors, because it's amino acid conjugation, you have to have enough protein. So the things that is not enough protein, either a low protein diet or poor stomach acid, can be a factor here that inhibits amino acid conjugation. So it's really looking and leaving no stone unturned. The nutrients that it needs are, of course, a bunch of amino acids like glycine, taurine, glutamine, arginine, ornithine. There's also some electrolytes, which is stuck in there just in case. Potassium and eating an alkaline diet, potassium, sodium, and eating an alkaline diet, and then curcumin, which is from turmeric. This is a summary, again, of nutrients needed. It goes through all of the processes. Substances that inhibit phase 2, glutathione conjugation, selenium deficiency, B2 deficiency, glutathione deficiency, zinc deficiency, amino acid conjugation, basically a low-protein diet, methylation, folic acid and B12 deficiency, sulfation, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, yellow food dye, molybdenum, acetylation, B2, B5, or C deficiency, and finally glucuronidation, aspirin, or probenecid. So then there's some foods that support phase 2 detoxification, and I broke it down based on the pathways. You could just make yourself a master list, give the person a master list. I'm giving you the details so that you can make choices as to how do you want to present it. So again, we went through all these before, brassicas for the glutathione. Brassicas are pretty much good for most of the pathways. That's your cabbage, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, etc. Limonene containing foods like citrus peel, dillweed oil, caraway oil, all of these help support phase 2. Glucuronidation, fish oils, limonene containing food. Methylation, beets, brassicas. Sulfation, brassicas. Amino acid conjugation protein and acetylation, garlic, onion, soy, berries, and grapes. These are all good foods to start getting people to eat. I mean, careful of the grapes if they have blood sugar problems. But certainly these are good foods to help people to get on to support their phase 2 detoxification. And here's another list. You can see I just pulled a lot of lists together. You make one big master list. So herbs that support the detox. Milk thistle is one of your best antioxidants for the liver. It doesn't actually promote any of the detox pathways per se, but it protects the liver from damage. It's just dandelion, burdock, echinacea, artichoke leaf, and turmeric. And artichoke leaf, we're talking the big leaves on the plant. And these are all very helpful for supporting detoxification. So stamp out the foods that disrupt detox. And I know people say, well, how am I going to live my life? How am I going to be happy if I can't drink wine? And like, are you happy having to go to bed at 5 o'clock at night and not being able to get up again until 7 o'clock the next morning? I mean, come on, really, how important is this? How important is your food compared to the rest of your life? So on this list of foods that disrupt detox, not a complete list by any stretch of the imagination, but it's just something that you can have people write down and keep on their refrigerator, like, oh, don't do that, no, don't do that.